Hi there, welcome to Business Daily. My name's Ed Butler. On today's show, we're going to go inside Russia to find out, after 6 months of sanctions, how is the economy getting on?
It's about survival, and in survival mode, the Russians are doing pretty good. You can still buy a Mercedes-Benz or, I don't know, a Chevy truck or an iPhone. You can buy all these things, just pay more than before.
But is this just the beginning? Some say much darker clouds are now looming over the Russian economy and Russia's military project.
We've seen huge declines, certainly in the automobile industry, where foreign firms have simply pulled out altogether. But we're also seeing it in the steel industry, coal mining for coking coal and so forth. They could be in trouble.
That's all to come in Business Daily from the BBC. It has been a dramatic week on the battlefields of eastern Ukraine. Clear signs of wide-ranging military advances by the Ukrainians into what was Russian-occupied territory. Russia's troops, in some cases, have simply abandoned their guns and equipment and are running, according to reports. In Moscow, even some pro-Kremlin pundits on the main news channels are acknowledging a significant military failure.
The people who convinced President Putin that the special operation will be fast and effective, that we'll come in with our National Guard and bring things to order, that the Ukrainians will either flee or want to join us in Russia, these advisers really set us up. We now have to understand that it's absolutely impossible to defeat Ukraine using these resources and war methods.
The question is, though, to what extent do these military setbacks reflect more systemic pressures? One recently leaked document from Russia's finance ministry suggested that the nation, which is already in recession, had to set aside some $6 billion in compensation payments to families of dead service personnel. There are some 50,000 casualties, it indicates. Another estimate from a Western research institute suggests Russia has lost $16 billion worth of hardware already. That was before this month's battlefield defeats. Sergei Guriev is a Russian economist. He was once an advisor to Vladimir Putin's finance ministry, and he's now based in Paris. He says the chaotic war effort and wider economic travails are all connected.
That is the reflection of long-term degradation of Russian military defense complex, the defense industries, as well as recent sanctions that prevent Russian government from building modern military equipment.
Yes, there was a report in one website I saw last week talking about a specific wish list that the Russians have with microchips, because, of course, they're affecting all forms of industry, but also the military production.
Exactly. Also, there is an indication that Russian government goes to Iran to buy military equipment such as drones, which are not technology frontier drones. There's been also reports from New York Times, from leaks from American intelligence, that Russia is trying to buy military stuff from North Korea. And both pieces of news are extremely humiliating for Russian military defense complex, which always positioned itself as at least second in the world.
So then, a quick reminder. Russia, since March, has been facing some of the broadest and most crushing economic sanctions ever applied against a developed economy. The countries applying those sanctions, the US and EU member states, are planning further measures relating to Russia's biggest export, oil. So times are pretty hard right now for Russians. Or are they?
I'm in a grocery store. It was just on the way, so I decided to take a look what is happening here. A lot of products. I don't see, like, empty shelves. A pallet of sugar, and different types of flour.
That was a clip of one Russian blogger, Zangiev, in his local Moscow supermarket, demonstrating that for regular shoppers like him, life in Russia does still seem pretty normal. Yes, prices have risen, especially of imported goods, but that's true in most developed economies these days. President Vladimir Putin is talking tough on the theme of hardship. He mocks what he calls the failure of Western sanctions fever, which he says poses more of a threat to the global economic system than it does to Russia itself.
Его неприкрытые агрессивные попытки навязать другим странам модели поведения.
The West's brazen and aggressive attempts to force others how to behave, deprive them of their sovereignty and force them into submission. This policy has been used by the West for decades, and it's failed.
Vladimir Putin. But is that really true? Last week I spoke to one Russian businessman. His name is Dmitry Nechayev, and he runs a high-end bicycle assembly firm based in the city of Sochi in southern Russia.
Things have become more expensive, from milk to motor oil. You know, officials say the average inflation is like 10 or 15%. But what my friends are showing me, the prices are sometimes twice as high on the products that they used to buy all the time. So you can still buy a Mercedes-Benz or a Chevy truck or an iPhone. You can buy all these things. They're officially banned, but you can still get them. You just pay more than before. But people who stay there, they have no choice. They have nowhere to go like I can. So they have to stay there and survive, and they manage.
Well, as Dmitry Nechayev hints there, he has now actually left Russia. In protest at the war, he's claimed citizenship in Israel, although his company and other employees do remain in his home country. He recalls how the first sanctions imposed just after the war began hit his firm really hard.
For example, the suppliers that we worked with over 12 years from the US and Europe, they email you saying, hey, we love you guys, but we are no longer going to accept any payments from you or any orders. All your accounts are closed. That means I had like 20 projects. I would have to cancel them. So that's one thing. Then PayPal stopped working. MasterCard and Visa stopped working. So I couldn't receive any payments from outside of Russia. And the currency rate went crazy. It like almost tripled in a couple of weeks, making some of the parts three times more expensive as before. And also about 60% of our sales would go outside of Russia. That would be, you know, South Korea, Australia, Germany, US. These kind of orders disappeared. I only received like one order outside of Russia in the last 6 months.
Right. So it's really hard, obviously, any foreign-based business has gone. But in terms of just the business of doing business inside Russia, how has that developed? What is it like being a businessman in Moscow or Sochi nowadays?
To be frank, it wasn't that bad because Corona went away. Things were going better. And running business in Russia, there was a little bit too much bureaucracy, but the taxes were pretty good, and they still are. So it made sense to be there. Could make something in Russia and export it outside of Russia. It made a lot of sense. Russians are used to hard times. So most companies learned to survive in this kind of atmosphere, which is survival. And in survival mode, the Russians are doing pretty good. I don't see any future in this, but people who stay there, they have no choice. They have nowhere to go like I can. Many business owners tell me they're trying to survive, but they're not motivated to do anything more in their lives. They're just like doing their daily routine and hoping that this will all end soon.
Will your company survive?
I'm hoping. I'm working on a solution to actually get them out. If we get out, we will.
The Russian bike maker Dmitry Nechayev. So it sounds like the situation is bad, but possibly not terminal for businesses. Not yet, anyway. But another finance ministry document seen by Bloomberg News last week describes a much worse picture than even the official government statistics suggest. The economist Sergei Guriev says that the Kremlin is now desperately concealing the full extent of what's happening in the economy.
Mr. Putin can say whatever he wants, but basically the idea is that when the government officials talk to each other in Russia, they use more adequate forecasts. And once we look at it, it's really, really, really bad.
What's interesting is the way in which so many different sectors really are affected by specific imports. I mean, it just shows how a modern economy is dependent very much on what comes from outside. Aviation, machine building, pharmaceuticals, transport, communications and IT, even agriculture. 99% of poultry production apparently depends on imports, according to this ministry report.
Yes, exactly. That's normal. This is the modern world where we depend on each other. And that's why a lot of people didn't believe that Putin would start this war, exactly because it would be so costly. And it will be very costly in the immediate future. Moscow continues to live more or less normally, but that is because the real sanctions have not started yet. The real sanctions are oil embargo, which will start only in December. The real sanctions are oil price cap, which will only start in December.
As Sergei Guriev says, the biggest hit to Russia's economy hasn't yet happened. By far, its biggest single revenue source comes from oil production, and despite sanctions from the West, Russia has managed to find substitute markets in other countries for oil, notably India and China. But later this year, the plan from the G7 to impose a global price cap on all Russian exports may change things. So how exactly is this going to work? I asked Alina Rybakova. She's the deputy chief economist at the International Institute of Finance.
So the idea is that the G7 countries have agreement. They're not going to buy Russian oil above a certain price level.
So basically, if the current price of oil is, let's say, $90 a barrel, the G7 countries would say, we're not going to buy your oil for more than $60 a barrel.
For example, yes. The idea is that it's still higher than the cost of production to remove this extraordinary revenues for the Russian current account and fiscal accounts.
So what's to stop Russia selling all of its oil from now on to, let's say, Indians or Chinese or others who aren't part of the G7?
That's a very good question. First, there is logistics. You know, so Russia exports to Europe oil via Druzhba pipeline, so it's hard to redivert all of that towards Asia. So we estimate so about 30% of it can be diverted on the ships. And it's reported that India and China already buy more than 50% of Russian oil at the moment. The question is, of course, then of insurance. You know, if the G7 were to come down on insurers of the ships to say, look, you are not allowed to do it, you will have to basically be an implementer of sanctions in a way. You will be potentially under severe compliance risk. And I think the fact that it has driven Russia into a countermeasure of not sending gas to Europe, Russian revenues are already down, and then also it incentivizes Europeans to move away faster from Russian gas. So I think all these methods of pressure on Russia, especially on the energy complex, are all adding up.
Economist Alina Rybakova. Well, whether or not the sanctions work, there remains a big question whether a declining economy more generally is going to have any impact on the politics of Russia, a country which has largely maintained its war expenditure despite sanctions. It's probably going to carry on doing that, and surveys suggest that many ordinary Russians do still support the war. Stephen Crowley is a political scientist at Oberlin College in the US. He's studied the past links between economic hardship and social unrest in Russia, and he does think the Kremlin may have cause for concern.
There are signs of some increase in labor protest. Complaints to authorities higher up, say for non-payment of wages at a particular factory or firm. Wage arrears, just wages not simply being paid altogether. So a kind of hidden unemployment. But it is a way that the Russian authorities and the Russian system has avoided sort of overt strikes or social explosion, which is something they've been afraid of in the past. And I would imagine they will be again afraid of quite soon.
But you'd imagine also with a load of factories struggling with materials for export because there isn't an export market available to them, or factories dependent on foreign spare parts to keep their machines running, many of those will be struggling to operate anyway. And we're going to see factory closures, surely.
Yeah, it's hard not to see that unfolding at some point. One question is when exactly that might happen, but you're exactly right. So a number of places are operating now with reserves. We've seen huge declines, certainly in the automobile industry, where foreign firms have simply pulled out altogether. But we're also seeing it in places like the steel industry, which is really quite striking because they had been quite profitable until recently. They have a very hard time finding export markets. And this also hits down the cycle to mining, coal mining for coking coal and so forth. And then there are in Russia over 300 monotowns. So these are single industry towns and cities that basically rely on one factory or one industry for basically the well-being of the entire town. So I would imagine a lot of intervention to prevent that from happening, because it's one thing if the middle-class professionals are protesting in Moscow and St. Petersburg, as they have in the past, but if workers in working-class communities that have been at least seen as the bedrock of the Putin regime, if they start protesting, that really sends a signal that they could be in trouble.
There is an archetype, isn't there, that Russia is somehow different, that it's been through generations of famines, dictatorships, world wars, that the Russian people are going to put up with a great deal before they rise up against their leaders. I mean, do you think that idea is true or is it overplayed?
I'd say it's both true and overplayed. So in the 1990s, there wasn't a social explosion. There were many strikes. There were rail wars as coal miners blocked the Trans-Siberian Railway and so on. But you're quite right. Russians understandably have a reputation for putting up with significant hardship. The protests that have happened have tended to be when the government takes steps that intrude onto people's daily lives. And it seems as if they are trying to maintain this. They have not mobilized the draft, called up mass conscripts to fight this war because of the potential danger that might create. But when the economy continues to deteriorate and already living standards have declined for over a decade, and that creates the danger that people feel like, okay, wait a minute, they've done something to us. We need to fight back for our rights.
The thoughts of Professor Stephen Crowley of Oberlin College in the US. He was speaking to me, I should say, before some of the latest dramatic battlefield advances by Ukraine, which of course themselves could affect public sentiment in Russia. But that's it for this edition of Business Daily. I hope you've enjoyed it. We're going to be back same time tomorrow with more. Till then, take care.